Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson on this wonderful Monday. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, and we celebrate the good things going on at the University of Arizona on this Wonder Series. One of the good things going on at the University of Arizona are the graduates, the students that go through the process, and Ackerley Advertising is really pleased to announce that we have a new person. I was teasing her earlier and saying she's our new CEO. She's going to run the place, but welcome, Morgan Murphy.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
You're a graduate of the University of Arizona in marketing, and then you're going on to get your master's degree in marketing, and you'll be with us for the next several, until you make those millions of dollars doing what you're going to be doing after you graduate. But welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Great example of the great things going on at the university. With us today is the Dean of the College of Humanities, Elaine Philippe Duran. Good morning, AP.
Good morning, Ed. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. You're got a lot of responsibilities at the U of A. Let's talk first about your own journey to the University of Arizona. How did you get to the U of A?
So I get to the U of A in 2010. There was a call for a new position as director of the School of International Languages, Literatures, and Cultures in the College of Humanities, and so I applied, and I was selected, which was great, and that's how I came. I was at the University of Rhode Island before coming
Rhode
here.
Rhode Island, great. And this is kind of an odd question, maybe perhaps, but as I was preparing for today, I just said, I want to ask him this question. How did you fall in love with the humanities?
Yeah, so I think that from a very early, young age, I loved reading right away. As soon as I knew how to read, I really liked to read. So that's how it started, really with literature. And then as I started, going to school and later going to the university, it always stays with me. In college, I was a double major in the humanities and in business, and I could see how the two, they would feed each other. So I always, I always keeping that in mind, and that's what I do today. Being the dean, I definitely use all of those skills, the business skills and the humanities skills.
So Morgan, we have another option for you here. You're getting your marketing degree at the Eller College of Business, but maybe the humanities is something that would be good for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit. The College of Humanities is very diverse and so forth. And we're going to talk about the festival coming up, but tell us about your responsibility on that business side of things and what the College of Humanities in its general, so when someone asks you what is the College of Humanities, what's your response to that?
Absolutely. So the College of Humanities is really the way we look at it is we approach. So as dean, my responsibility is really to direct and run the college and to really support all of the different units and heads and directors and faculty and staff and students in the college. For the humanities, is a great time nowadays because we happen to research and teach the skills and competencies that are the most in demand on the job market. So things like critical thinking, adaptability, intercultural competence, collaboration, communication, all of those things are in high demand in all industries, including business and marketing or any type of things that you want to do. So this is our vision. That's what we are trying to do in the college. And to do that, we collaborate with every other college on campus.
Right. So you have a core faculty that are in humanities, but then you're collaborating with other departments and other schools across the university who kind of offer tracks that are related to the humanities, correct?
That's correct. So we have our faculty, they are world-class researchers and teachers. They teach very popular classes, and we do collaborate, and they do collaborate with other colleges. To give you an example, which is of actuality right now, since we have a festival on wellness, we are collaborating with the College of Medicine Tucson.
Okay, great. So you have this great event coming up. It's going to be it's a festival, so it's a month long. So it's pretty amazing. Tell us a little about the Tucson Humanities Festival. Its genesis and beginning, and what it has grown into. It was a day and a week, and now it's a month. So it's pretty amazing.
That's right. We have been doing this for more than a decade. Like you said, initially it was called Humanities Week. It will be for 1 week. There will be events every day throughout a week, lectures and presentation. And then, as the as the festival grow, we extended it to a full month. So it's throughout the month of October, once a year, the Tucson Humanities Festival. And this is a way to feature some of our faculty, to do presentation to the community. Mm-hmm. The objective with the festival is really to connect with the community at large, to go out there and to offer some programming for anyone. You don't have to be a student or associated with the university to attend or participate.
And all of these events that you're hosting over the next month are free, basically, right?
That's correct. They are free and open to the public. And every year we choose a theme. So this year the theme is well-being, because mm-hmm. We are inaugurating this year a new space that is called the Health Humanities Hub. It's
right.
going to be in the new center. It is in the new Center for Integrative Medicine, the Angie Wild Center for Integrative Medicine. That's one of those partnerships we are doing on campus. The College of Medicine Tucson, they really wanted to work with the humanities to make sure that those future physicians, they have those humanities skills that we were talking about. And so we are very excited that Dr. Andy Weil himself will
right.
be the opener. And his lecture, which is on Wednesday, is open, of course, to the public.
And that's October 9th at 6 o'clock p.m. And what's the location for his presentation?
It's going to be at the Health Science Innovation Building on campus.
Okay. And if they go to the website, obviously they can see the specific directions. But
That's
of
right.
course, Dr. Weil has been just a cutting edge person on this whole idea of health and wellness, integrating those two and humanities, and putting the humanities into that, and obviously has not only nationwide but international fame in that regard.
Absolutely, and that's why we are so grateful that he has been such a great collaborator with the College of Humanities, as well as with our Center for Buddhist Studies. We have a center as well in the college, and we are very, very happy about this collaboration.
Great. We're talking with the Dean of the College of Humanities, A.P. Duran, who is, we are celebrating this month, Humanities Festival, a series of different presentations by faculty and other notables. We'll get into that a little bit after the break. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Morgan Murphy and I are going to be back in just a minute with AP to talk a little bit about the event series and the different presentations that go all the way through the end of the month, celebrating the humanities, health and wellness, and why that is important for us as humans to make sure that we have our mind and our body health both doing well at the same time. So we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Again, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host of the Friday and Monday shows. The Friday shows, we talk about great success stories. On Monday, we talk about wonder and the great things happening at the University of Arizona. Our guest this morning, along with me in studio, is our new CEO of Ackerley Advertising and Jump in Tucson, and the world, the CEO of the world, Morgan Murphy. Welcome back, Morgan.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. And Dr. Elaine Philippe Duran, the Duran College of Humanities Dean. Welcome back to talking about humanities and how important that is. You've got a great event, the festival, coming up all this month, with a kickoff on Wednesday with Dr. Andrew Weil, Integrating Health and Wellness, at 6 p.m., and the public is invited to that.
That's right.
And then you've got some other events coming October 17th. You have Brandon Thom, Community and Belonging in the Borderlands, which is an important discussion, especially in our political discourse right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are very excited to have Brandon Thom, who is a Pulitzer winner poet,
right.
and he's going to be presenting at our Poetry Center, which is also part of the College of Humanities. I encourage anyone who has not done so to visit the Poetry Center. It's a great facility.
Amazing.
On
yeah.
campus, right?
Yeah. And
so
they've expanded recently their collection, right?
That's correct. They have expanded, and they always have great speakers. This will be the case on October 17. And that's right. The idea with the Humanities Festival and with the College of Humanities really is to have a broader perspective. So to look at things from different perspectives. So in the case of the theme for this year, well-being, with this poet coming, Brandon Sum, we're going to really touching about well-being in the community, about the idea. So it's not just about, you know, purely science or medicine. There are also all of those other things that come with it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when we hear you talk about this, the how we as human beings need to be concerned about our health, but also, you know, the best medicine we have for our health is the power of the mind and the ability of ourselves to self-correct and to self-heal. Now, obviously, we need medical help in many ways for a lot of different reasons, but how have these two converged over the years, health and the power of the mind?
Yes, this is very important what you are talking about, and that's why it's so important for us to collaborate. You know, very often you hear in the general public this opposition between what supposedly will be the hard skills and the soft skills that we will be teaching in the humanities. Us, we like to call them the essential skills. And this idea of the power of the mind, it's kind of like what we do in the humanities when you think about it, things like, you know, critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, that you are dealing with the things that are abstract, that cannot be touched, like emotions. And yet they are so important. So regardless if you're going to be a physician, if you're going to be a lawyer, an engineer, you're going to have to deal with emotions. You're going to have to deal with the power of the mind and to make decisions, sometime in a stressful environment. You're going to have to adapt to anything. But most of all, you're going to have to remember that whoever you are dealing with and you are communicating with or collaborating with, they are human beings. You know, they are not just like a robot. And this is extremely important, even more so today, you know, with artificial intelligence and all these modern technologies that are coming, more than ever, we believe that it's important to have the human at the center. I'm not saying that, artificial intelligence is a bad thing, but I think it's very important to keep in mind the power of the mind and to have, the human beings at the center, at the core, and never forget about that.
And this will be the topic that Dr. Andrew Whale will be talking about on October 9th, this coming Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And his presentation is free. And he is one of the foremost thinkers on the convergence of this health and mind and body, and how you bring those two together and converge of how to heal thyself and how to use medicine and use organics and other things to help bring us to a wholeness of life, which is really powerful. As we age, we all face some challenges and so forth, but even young people have issues from time to time, and the mind is so powerful in the healing process. We know that laughter, they say, is the best medicine, and emotion and the ability of the mind to get us through difficult times is part of that whole process.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We're talking with AP Alain Philippe Durand of the Durand Dean of Humanities at the University of Arizona. This is the Wonder Series, where we talk about wonderful things going on at the University of Arizona. So, first off, the festival is this entire month, and there is a schedule. Where do people go? What website do they go to in order to learn a little bit more about the festival and the University of Arizona Humanities, College of Humanities?
Yes, so we have a website with all the information. It's humanitiesfestival.arizona.edu.
Pretty simple.
Yes.
Yeah, humanitiesfestival.arizona.edu. And the schedule is on there. And all of these presentations by faculty and the poet Brandon Sum and the Health and Humanities Fair and Cafe on October 23rd, and then the October 29th Faculty Salon with Humanities and Health. Those are all free events, and the locations are in different buildings, but they're all clearly marked, and parking is relatively close to each of those big buildings.
That's right. Everybody's welcome, and we look forward to seeing everybody there.
So we talk about the human mind, and one of the things I would encourage, it's my age, but I've just opened myself to so many more opportunities. We just had Chad Herzog on from Arizona Arts Live, and I've started going to some of the presentations that the arts community has presented on the university campus. And I can honestly say in the last 10 or 15 years, I haven't gone to many of those. And I've just forced myself to say, I'm going to go try something new that I haven't. And I've just been so pleased. And so walk out of those presentations. I want to use that analogy to say, if somebody is thinking about how do I broaden my horizons and how do I look at my mind and do something different, rather than sitting at home and watching a TV show or doing something, let's get you out and get you some exposure, some world-class people who are doing some thinking about the power of the mind and health, and challenge yourself to come and get on campus and be part of that.
I could not agree more. And in fact, in the College of Humanities, what I would say is that you can come to the Tucson Humanities Festival this month and check it out. And then if you want to have even more of that, I would encourage anyone to check out. We have a program that is open to the community that is called it's called the Humanities Seminars Program. You can find it on the website as well. And those are classes. There are no exams or grades or anything like that. They are classes open to the community and taught by world-class faculty from the college and also from other colleges on campus.
And this is a unique feature of university life, that these researchers and these scholars and these people have been working in the humanities for so many years, share their research, share their work, share their passion, share their love of the humanities with the community. And, again, I encourage many people to take a look. And you don't have to go to them all, but pick one or two and broaden your horizons and go out and make a difference in your own life. And you'll have a more fulfilled life. That's what the humanities is all about.
Absolutely. It's a great experience. And then, if you travel around, you can also experience hands-on those humanities skills and knowledge that you will acquire in the classroom as well. So,
right. A guy like me who went to university in the late 70s, I graduated in 79. To me, the humanities signaled, at least in my own brain, history, a little bit more history and the Renaissance and maybe Roman and Greek and those kind of things, which is true. There's a lot of that. But it's also very modern, isn't it? Humanities is a study of human nature, basically. So it's very modern.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one example I always like to give is that from my background in French literature, often we would be asked, what are you going to do with that? French literature, Oh, I will be meeting some alumni that are very successful, like, for instance, Bernard Dorrance, who has named the deanship for the college. He's a great supporter of our college. Right. He was a French major, and the first time I met him, he told me, he said, yeah, AP, I don't know if I'm the kind of alumni that you are looking for, because, I have to admit that, yes, I did my major in French, but, during my career, except for when I travel, I don't really use French. And I told him, no, you're wrong. You are exactly the kind of alumni I'm looking for. Because when you learn French, and that was your experience, yes, you're going to know how to speak French and to understand French, but you're also going to know about, problem solving, creativity, critical thinking, all of these other skills we were talking about that are the most in demand on the job market to this day. Yeah. And that's why he was able to be such a successful, business entrepreneur. It's because he was able to use those skills. So that's why the humanities today, and that's why all these colleges, they want to work with us. Right. Because there is this growth, there is this high demand for those skills, no matter what you do. Nobody's going to say, what critical thinking, somebody that can work with anybody? We don't need somebody like that. No way. That's the opposite.
You definitely need it. And that's what Morgan, you and I have been working on in the Eller College, about critical thinking, creativity, solving problems and collaboration and all those things. And that's the humanities. That's also business.
That's right.
And they come together. And it's also your health, too, to have health in mind and body. Well, this is great. If people are interested in going to the festival, they can go to Humanities Festival at arizona.edu, correct?
That's correct. humanitiesfestival.arizona.edu.
Arizona.edu, right. Okay, and so that's the website. List all the presentations and all the places and the buildings that you need to go to for that. And it's just been a pleasure this morning. Dr. Alain-Philippe Durand, AP, It goes by AP, the Dean of the College of Humanities. It's been just a joy to have you here.
Thank you, Ed. Send me here.
One thing is really just very apparent. You are a very enthusiastic person. You're very, very excited, and we love your passion for the humanities and for life in general and for your ambassadorship of the University of Arizona. So thanks for all the good work you're doing at the University of Arizona. We think that's great.
Thank you so much.
Well, Morgan, we learned a little bit this morning, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we learned that our marketing degrees are powerful things and part of the humanities as well. Well, on Mondays, we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona, and certainly the Humanities Festival coming up this month, starting October 9th at 6 with Dr. Andrew Weil and the other presentations throughout the month. I just challenge you to check it out. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our great sponsors, and we hope you're enjoying Jump in Tucson. Welcome back. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We're going to be talking about the weather and climate change and other things. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, and with me in studio this morning is our new CEO of Ackerley Advertising. I say that, I keep saying that, and we keep laughing about it because this is her first week on the job. So welcome, Morgan Murphy.
Thank you.
Morgan's going to be a marketing master's student through the end of May and take the world by storm. But in the meantime, she's working here at Jump in Tucson and at Ackerley Advertising. So in this segment, we're going to be talking to Dr. Kaustub Thirumali. I'm sorry, I got that right the first time and not the second time. But he made it really easy for me. He said, call me Kau, K-A-U. So I'm going to call you Kau. How's it going?
Good.
Welcome to Jump in Tucson. So you are, I called you professor. I'm going to make that promotion. You're on your way to your tenure. So I'm going to call you professor. But you are a professor of climate change, paleoceanography, inorganic geochemistry, all those things. What are those things?
At its basic essence, I'm an earth scientist, and I study the earth through chemistry mainly. Chemistry and through biology, through fossils.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit first about you and where you're from and your journey to make it here to the University of Arizona.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You have a radio voice. You were saying you had a little show in Austin, Texas, and we can tell you have golden tones. You do a great job. So,
thank you. Yeah, it was a show where we interviewed scientists called "They Blinded Me with Science."
I love it.
But yeah, so my name's Kaustub Thirumali, and I'm from Bangalore, India. It's where I was born. I have an American accent because I did my first grade to fourth grade in Detroit, Michigan. Then we moved back.
Are we supposed to say that Detroit's my favorite foreign country? Are we supposed to say that out loud? Yeah.
Back in the day, this was early 90s. So,
yeah. It's much improved in Detroit now.
Yeah.
Then you went back to India.
Back to India, and then I did my chemical engineering. So I was a chemical engineer during my undergrad, and the idea of doing field work in fertilizer plants was a lower prospect on my book than going out to tropical coral reefs and being on a ship. And that's what kind of attracted me into earth sciences and ocean sciences.
Yeah. So, why are you fascinated with oceans and weather and the future of human-caused weather conditions?
Well, taking a step back, two-thirds of our planet is the ocean. And what happens in the ocean doesn't stay in the ocean. And so the ocean plays a very critical role in mediating climate change and the weather in places as well. And growing up in India, we have our own monsoon over there, just like here in Tucson, but it's a much larger system. And the monsoon is really tied to what the ocean does. And that's really kind of what got me interested in it as I lived through the monsoon year in, year out, and saw these changes associated with the ocean.
And, our lifetimes here on Earth, yours and mine, and our life cycle and Morgan's and so forth, is a blip in the, it's a blink in the history of the world and the universe and so forth. But right now, the world seems to be going through some dramatic weather occurrences. If we just look at the recent hurricanes in the southeast, but also over the typhoons over in the other side of the world, pretty severe weather happening, and, you know, wildfires and heat and what Phoenix, I think, had 117 days in a row over 100 degrees. And so we're seeing some interesting weather patterns, melting of the ice sheets and so forth. So this is an important part of what you're studying, is what the future holds and what weather can do.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, given the rise in CO2 and how we're forcing the planet right now, you know, you can look into the past, and that's kind of what we do. Our field of science basically is called paleoclimatologists and paleoceanographers, and we try to ask the Earth, that's been around for a much, much, much longer time, as you say, about what answers it can hold in terms of how the system works.
Right. So, you know, the University of Arizona is noted for its tree ring lab, and one of the things that the tree ring lab does is they can look at the back through those, and that's kind of like a documentation of, in some cases, thousands of years of what the climate was like and what things were like. Well, you're doing a similar thing with sea creatures and so forth, and studying the oceans in a similar way of how does, over time, does the ocean change, which is obviously, as you said, that dramatically affects the what we're seeing in terms of weather on land. So this is a similar kind of an experience, right?
Absolutely right. We go and on ships, and we basically take marine sediment cores from the bottom of the ocean, and they've been accumulating over time. So there are time machines, mm-hmm. and there are plankton shells that are floating in the ocean right now and locking in the temperature and different aspects of the ocean, and they die and they fall to the seafloor, mm-hmm. and then rivers and wind bring in the sediment that cover them up. And then we basically go and take these cores and go back in time to when these guys were living thousands to millions of years ago.
So when a ship goes out and drills a core, and it's 6, 8, 10 feet, 3 yards, a mile long, however long it's going to be, mm-hmm. you can take, just kind of like a tree ring, you can go through and you can kind of annotate the years that these are, what they are, the epochs and the eras that these animals died and floated to the bottom and then were covered. And with that, you're able to kind of go back as a timeline, a look back in time, right?
That's precisely right. Except the rings in trees, they grow every year, but out in the ocean sediment, you know, 1 centimeter might mean 1 million years or 1,000 right. years, or it could be 1 year if you're offshore the Mississippi, for example.
Right.
So it depends where you're at.
Yeah. And this is, all oceans are part of this. There's these little plankton and these little microscopic animals are all over, sea creatures, I guess I should call them, are all over all the oceans. And so this happens, since it's 2/3 of the coverage of the globe, this is everywhere this is happening, correct?
That's right. But just like the land, where we have different ecosystems, forests and swamps, and there's different creatures that live there, these guys in particular, they also have this diversity. So different ones live in the Arctic oceans, different ones live in the tropical oceans. And we can basically tell by the invasion of things that lived in the Arctic oceans, if they come into the tropics, guess what? We can tell that it was colder at that time. So that's one of the ways in which we look at these fossils and try to understand past ocean change.
So the article that is getting some national acclaim is about the Ice Age, and about how the clues that you get from the Ice Age can predict perhaps the weather patterns in our future. And that's an interesting thing, that we can look back at the Ice Age and the cooling of the planet, perhaps, but what does that mean for the future?
That's exactly right. So initially our ideas, not just mine or my team's, but paleoclimatologists, was that if we understand the Ice Age, then everything in the warming would be opposite to what we find in the Ice Ages. And that has not always been borne out in the way that we thought. But in this case, that's why we went to the Ice Age, is because the signal is so large. The hit to the climate system is large. And we had, you know, ice sheets all the way in New York City, Chicago, you know, giant ice sheets, and that dropped global sea level. So the forcing to the climate system, the kind of the hit to the climate system, is approximating what's going to happen to the world in 2100 or 2200.
Great. We're talking with Dr. Kaustubh Thirumalai.
You got it. Yeah.
Thirumalai. Sorry about that. He told me to call him Dr. Kau, K-A-U. So Dr. Kau is here with us. He's a professor in climate change, paleoceanography, and inorganic geochemistry at the University of Arizona. A fascinating discussion about how the ocean can give us clues about what the world was like in the ice age. When was the last ice age, by the way? When we call it the ice age, when was that?
So the last ice age spanned for about 90,000 years, and it kind of terminated about 11,000 years ago. But we study the last glacial maximum, or when the ice sheets were the maximal strength, because we want to get that large signal, and that was about 21,000 to 19,000 years ago.
Well, that seems like so far ago, but again, just a blip in time, right? Just a geographical blip in time. Seems like a long time for us humans, but for geology, it's just a nanosecond in geological time, right?
And that's what's amazing, is that a nanosecond ago in geological time, we had such a dramatically different Earth.
Right. That's great. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your co-research and the Ice Age and how you're finding out about how this affects weather in the future. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Series, highlighting the good things going on at the University of Arizona. We'll be back after the break to talk a little bit more about weather research and the Ice Age and what the weather will look like in the future. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. Thank you, Matt Neely, for the great bump music about weather. We're talking with Dr. Kaustubh Thirumalai, who is the A professor on climate change. He's on his way to tenureship at the University of Arizona. He's a professor in climate change, paleoceanography, and inorganic chemistry at the University of Arizona. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Dr. Cow, I'm going to call you Dr. Cow. That's what I'm going to call you. So you have a fascinating study about the Ice Age and your research into microorganisms and how their demise has actually helped us kind of look into the past, but also predict the future. So could you tell us a little about some of your co-researchers on this project that you worked with?
Yeah, so for this particular paper, I'm actually what is called a co-lead author. So there was another author who was involved. His name is Pedro D'Inizio. He's a professor at CU Boulder. And we also collaborated with folks at the University of Texas at Austin, at Middlebury College in Vermont, and the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Falmouth, Massachusetts.
How do those collaborations come about? Is it because you guys know each other in the institutional networking that goes on? You just kind of know that you're all interested in the same kind of thing, and so that's kind of how that works out? Or how do those collaborations get come about?
You know, it's a little bit of that, and it's a little bit of, you know, work with your friends and have fun. So right. Some of them are friends, some of them had the right tools in the right places, and the team kind of came together in a sort of a non-pre-planned way,
right.
And we all have the same research interests, and this is a very interdisciplinary project because it involves models and data, so everyone has their own little bit that they contribute without which this research would not have happened.
And how did you stumble upon, I use the word stumble because I'm a layman and I don't actually know the great scientific term for this, but how did you stumble upon using the Ice Age as the gauge or the benchmark for this research?
Absolutely. Geologists have been fascinated with the Ice Age for a long time, ever since it was first proposed in about 1830 or so. And one of the reasons is that it is such a large hit to the system in terms of how dramatically the climate changed. And as you mentioned, it's a mere geological blink of an eye ago. So we have a lot of records in the sense that we have a lot of understanding of proxy samples, which we use to understand climate change in ancient times, from this time period as well.
Do we know why an ice age began? Is it the tilt of the axis of the Earth, or what is it that makes that ice age kind of grow down to as far as ice sheets down as far as New York and so forth?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It has to do with the way in which the Earth's orbit changes ever so slightly. And we've been in a cyclical series of ice ages and interglacials in between ice ages or warm periods. And that coincides with the advent of civilization as well, 11,000 years ago. But these cyclical changes have to do with how the Earth's orbit changes the way the sun's incoming solar radiation hits the planet. And a combination of complex processes give rise to these periodic ice ages and then a lack of an ice age like today, where we only have ice in the northern hemisphere and Greenland.
Some would argue that the addition of CO2 into the air and other chemicals that would cause a little bit more heating and the greenhouse effect. Also that some of this, although it could be cyclical, like you talked about ice age and non-ice age, this could also, a lot of research is happening now about what is the human impact on this industrialization and pumping stuff into the air, into the atmosphere, how this is. And if you take that into consideration as you were looking at the future weather patterns that might be come from this?
That's exactly what we're focusing on, because the last ice age, we know very accurately what atmospheric greenhouse gases look like. And we know that from ice cores, where there's literally ancient air trapped in ice cores. And we can measure the concentration of ancient air. And we know that the last ice age had low CO2. And so we, in our research, specifically looked at model predictions of future change where CO2 was increased by 2 times and by 4 times relative to the pre-industrial concentrations.
Wow. We're talking with Dr. Kaustubh Thirumalai, who is a professor of climate change, paleo-oceanography, and inorganic chemistry at the University of Arizona. Interesting study on the ice age and how it points to more extreme weather patterns in our future. So you use these little microscopic sea life, planktons and other things. How did you come up with that idea? That, you know, first you came up with the idea of using the ice age as the benchmark, but then how did it come about that, hey, we can look at these little microscopic sea life that die and make their way to the bottom of the ocean and covered with sediment as kind of the way to judge this? How did that come about, and how did you come up with that idea?
That's a great question. Thank you. So, like you mentioned, with tree rings, for example, which the University of Arizona was seminal in terms of developing that field. We can go and access these archives on land or go to lake sediments. The system that we were studying is the El Nino Southern Oscillation, El Niños and La Niñas, and that system originates in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, in the equatorial Pacific. So unfortunately, there are no trees or lakes that we can access directly in the Central Pacific. There are some islands, of course, and people have done a lot of research on those, but we want the oceanic signal. And that's why we went to an archive that exists that's ubiquitous, which are these foraminifera, these plankton shells. And two of my teammates sailed on the expedition to collect these sediment cores from the Central Pacific. And so it was a natural idea to target these guys to capture this El Nino Southern Oscillation variability. There's only one issue, is that they're really, really tiny. They're microscopic single-celled guys. So we had to develop a technique that can measure the isotopes in really, really tiny amounts of these calcium carbonate shells that these guys build. And that was how we were able to reconstruct and ask them, hey, what was El Nino and La Nina like during the last ice age?
And these are seashells like you would, you know, collect on the beach and so forth. They're just microscopic seashells, but they're basically the same thing. They're just in very, 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 very small form. And so you're having to look at them with a telescope as opposed to with the naked eye, and you're collecting seashells by the seashore, if not not to use a metaphor there.
That's absolutely right. Yeah,
that's great. So, what's the next step in the research? Well, you've published this paper, and you have this out in the scientific world now, and to understand what's going on. What's the next step for you and your team?
So, we're really trying to develop and test our hypothesis, because we put out a prediction that El Nino is going to increase in the future. That the intensity may be the same, but the frequency is definitely going to increase. So more. Sort of extreme events that's going to cause extreme weather all across the planet, including in Arizona. So we want to make sure that these are borne out by other higher resolution models, and we want to get more information from across the Pacific as well, from these ice age critters, and potentially also target a warmer interval even further back in time, so that we can test whether our prediction for the future is accurate from an even deeper geological warm period.
So there's a lot to do and a lot to look for
always.
In the future. You have job security for a while here. You're going to be able to look into the future, and that's great. Well, we want to thank you, Dr. Kaustubh Thirumalai, who has done a great job of having me pronounce his name. I finally got on the last run. Very good. Professor of Climate Change, Paleo-Oceanography, and Inorganic Chemistry at the University of Arizona. Fascinating research, and thank you for your good work on behalf of the University of Arizona. So this is the Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Coming up tomorrow, General Ted Maxwell hosts Tuesday. Grant Kruger will be here on Wednesday. Tom Moulton on Thursday. I'll be back on Friday with business success stories. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And who knows, maybe you'll be interviewed live on the air. Jump in Tucson is produced and directed by Ackerley Advertising. William Ackerley is the executive producer. Morgan Murphy is the CEO and the program broadcast from the Bustos Media Studios. Thanks to Matt Neely for his good work at KVOI 1030 AM Radio. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you enjoyed the show, the Monday Wonder Series. What a great celebration of the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Morgan, you're a good representation of the good things happening in student outcomes. So thank you for being here. And thank you, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson.